from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. Coming up in the hour ahead, a shortened live edition of our program. We'll be joining coverage of President Obama's press conference at 10:20, where he will be announcing the selection of John Kerry as the next Secretary of State. So in the next 20 minutes after the newscast, we will have a guest on board to talk about what that nomination may mean as we look forward to the prospects of those hearings that will take place on Capitol Hill for the nomination of Massachusetts John Kerry to be the next Secretary of State. We'll take that up when we return, and then we'll join President Obama's live press conference at 10:20. That's coming up on Forum and on NPR after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. Just 15 minutes from now, President Obama will hold a press conference in Washington, D.C., where he'll announce his selection of Massachusetts Senator John Kerry to be the next Secretary of State. We will join NPR's live coverage of that event in 15 minutes. Until that time, we want to get some thoughts on what that nomination may mean, as well as discuss some other developments going on in Washington, D.C. this morning. Joining us to do that is Mark Sandelow. He's Associate Director of the University of California's Washington, D.C. Center. Mark, good morning.
Good morning, Gabe.
Well, you've got a lot going on these days in Washington, D.C. I don't know whether I should start asking you about this nomination that the president is about to put forward or last night's adventures with Speaker Boehner. But let's stay with the topic of the hour, at least, which is the selection of John Kerry. No surprise, of course. And is your sense that this is a nomination that will sail through the Senate pretty easily?
It will sail through. Yeah. There is typically a bye or a nod that is often given to former senators. You know, this is a very elite club, and one of their own is selected. This nomination would go through the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. That is a committee that John Kerry is now head of. So anybody on that committee who's not likely to give him the nod is not somebody who gets along with their boss already. This is likely to fly through. I mean, this was very controversial in that by all appearances, this was not President Obama's first choice. The first choice was Susan Rice, who is currently the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. But due to the comments she made about Benghazi on national television, she has been pilloried by Republicans. And this is the choice that I think they all agreed on. Obama has so much on his plate. Like you say, it's hard to believe the nomination of a Secretary of State may be, at this point, the third most hot topic in Washington right now. But between the gun violence and gun control measures and then this fiscal cliff that is approaching, believe it or not, this nomination of a Secretary of State is probably the least controversial of all three.
Are you aware of anyone else being under consideration? There was so much focus, of course, on Susan Rice and her comments on that now infamous Sunday morning show. Was anyone else in the running, or was it always going to be either Susan Rice or John Kerry?
There were other names that were thrown out, but these were the people who were taken seriously. I mean, don't forget that John Kerry, there's all this talk about, well, John Kerry sucked up to the president by being easy on him. John Kerry was the guy who played Mitt Romney in the debate preparation.
Right.
There was thought that maybe Mitt Romney was currying favor somehow with Obama. Don't forget that John Kerry is the guy who, I'm trying to remember now how many years we're talking about, 8 years ago, almost 9 years ago, decided that the keynote speaker
right.
at his convention should be this young upstart guy, candidate for Senate, Barack Obama. He gave Obama his national fame. This is something that Kerry has been gunning for him. I think he's probably been gunning to be president of the United States since he was a little boy. But Secretary of State is something that has always been in John Kerry's sights. He's a guy who, like I say, is chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee. He considers himself an international figure, but also this is his expertise, our international issues. And there was a lot of talk about him being named Secretary of State before everyone was shocked that Hillary Clinton was named his Secretary of State. So, no, this comes as no surprise surprise to anybody in the foreign policy establishment.
Mark Sandelow, Associate Academic Director for the University of California's Washington, D.C. Center. If you have a question for Mark about the nomination of John Kerry or other developments that are going on in Washington, D.C. at this moment, you can join us at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. We just have the next 10 minutes or so before we'll be joining NPR's live coverage of President Obama's press conference where he'll announce this selection of John Kerry. Do you see, Mark, any shift in the way in which American foreign policy will either be oriented or conducted with this from the career of Hillary Clinton in that position? Obviously, they have different manners, different ways of going about business. Will it be more as a difference in style than substance?
I think so. And even the style, I mean, everyone has different mannerisms than John Kerry, but that who some people think is sort of chiseled like a U.S. senator ought to look. He is sort of the archetypical image of an American senator at this point. In terms of substance, I mean, there's small things. John Kerry has championed the cause of global warming. He's been very, very active in pushing U.S. negotiations in global warming around the world. So it's certainly possible that'll be a higher profile under a Kerry State Department. That said, I'm not exactly sure what a higher profile means in terms of policy, because even if John Kerry were to pull off a miracle, and with his guidance and leadership were to pull off some global agreement on carbon emissions, he has almost no chance of getting a treaty like that passed by two-thirds of the Senate, which is what it needs. So if even the U.S. Senate's not going to ratify what he negotiates, it may bring it to more prominence. That may be very important, but it's unlikely there'll be a big change. There's some people who suggest that Hillary Clinton, as Secretary of State, has paid very little attention to the Middle East, perhaps sensing that not a whole lot can get done there right now. She's paid much more attention on other human rights issues, a lot of women's issues, and other hot spots around the world. It's conceivable that Kerry will pay a little more attention there, but nobody sees this as a big change in direction for U.S. policy, and I don't think people around the world will look at this as the U.S. shifting direction, so it really is a status quo.
Let's switch over to politics for a moment and start with the political implications for this, because, of course, this means that John Kerry will be leaving the Senate. Does that mean that Scott Brown will run once again for the Senate in Massachusetts? How is that likely to play out?
It certainly appears that way, Dave. If you want the most cynical theory in Washington, it's not even that cynical, but it just makes people think that politics is as evil as they might have imagined, is that there are some people who think that the reason that John McCain and Lindsey Graham, the two Republican senators, went so vocal against Susan Rice for her comments about Benghazi, which a lot of people said are really within the norm of what you'd expect people to say. There was nothing there. The reason they did it is not because, as some suggested, she was an African-American woman. I mean, there was an African-American woman by the name of Rice who was a Secretary of State under George Bush, of course. The reason they did it, perhaps, is because by scuttling her nomination, they knew that John Kerry would be in the driver's seat, and by putting him in the driver's seat, now there will be an election in Massachusetts. The Democrats will have 55 seats in the U.S. Senate coming up when the new Congress convenes in January. This puts one of those seats in play. Scott Brown is the incumbent senator right now, Republican. He was beat by Elizabeth Warren. This creates a new opening. Typically in states, governors appoint replacements for opening in the Senate, and Deval Patrick is governor of Massachusetts. But because there was a guy who used to be governor of Massachusetts by the name of Mitt Romney, Ted Kennedy actually spearheaded legislation to take that right away from the governor of Massachusetts. Ironically, when Kennedy died, it was because of that law that there was an election and Scott Brown was elected to replace Kennedy. Yeah. Then he won re-election again. So, yes, we have an election again in Massachusetts. And, you know, when you talk about a 60-vote margin in the Senate, every vote matters. So, yeah, it'll be a high-stakes election now coming up in Massachusetts.
Let's switch over for a moment, Mark, before we join NPR in just 5 minutes or so, and give us your sense of this topsy-turvy events over the last 24 hours when John Boehner was going to bring the now infamous Plan B and then later in the night to realize that he didn't have the votes. What's going on? It seems like both Speaker Boehner and the week before when Mitch McConnell brought something up that he didn't have the votes for either, that they've sort of forgotten that cardinal rule that you don't bring something forward if you don't have the votes. What's happening?
Yeah, I don't know if they forgot it so much as there's also a thought that when things are really close, that you push them to a four and you lay it in front of the your constituents, in this case, other House members, and say, look, my reputation as Speaker, my ability to deal with President Obama is at stake. I need you to do this for me. The fact that that didn't work is humiliating for Boehner. But, I mean, I've tried to – it's almost like you've got this game of chicken where you've got two cars heading at each other and, you know, the Republicans and the Democrats. And the one of the cars has just thrown the steering wheel out the window. The Republicans have really said, look, go ahead. We will crash. We will head into the fiscal cliff. Taxes can go up. Spending can be cut in the military in ways that we say is terrible. Yeah, economists say there'll be a recession. But unless the Democrats – turn the car another direction, unless they take our plan of no new taxes for anybody, we're simply not going to make a change. It's a remarkable surprise. You know, people have been saying this fiscal cliff is coming. I keep telling them they always do this. You know, if any good negotiation looks like it's going to collapse until the very last second. I said the only thing that would scare me is if Republicans cut off negotiations and went home.
What's so remarkable?
They did that.
Right. And what's so remarkable is that all of the polling indicates, let alone the election results, is that the American people have sort of made up their minds about this, and it seems like the Republican caucus is saying, "Well, to hell with that. We're gonna keep driving in our own direction."
Well, you're right about that, and that drives Democrats crazy. But here's the thing to remember: they're not running for national office. I mean, if things get flipped around, and if Nancy Pelosi were standing up to a President George W. Bush, you wouldn't say, "Oh, come on, he won re-election, you know, Ms. Pelosi, just capitulate," would you?
Yep.
No, people in San Francisco want her to stand up, and so do conservatives.
So, what about the prospects, Mark, of a Democratic, largely the deal that's on the table from the president? Is there any chance that that proposal could pick up 20 Republican votes and that it would be passed largely by Democrats with just 20 Republicans signing on?
That's a great question, which no one knows the answer to right now. Those 20 Republicans who would jump ship and vote with the president would likely be out of work coming up fairly soon. I mean, it's very possible they would be challenged in their primaries. But there are a lot of Republicans who might say, yeah, fine, that's a risk I will take. I'll tell you, the first questions at Obama's press conference are likely to be along those lines. Now, another option that some progressive Democrats will be pushing is, you know, to hell with the moderate Republicans. Why not just go off the cliff? And next year, in the first week, right about the time that people first are feeling in their paychecks before too much damage is done, now with everyone's taxes up, Democrats with a stronger hand in Congress can propose all sorts of tax cuts for the middle class. Republicans wouldn't dare stand in the way. A lot of Democrats think they'll have a stronger hand if the cliff has simply gone over and then they start this over in about a week and a half.
So remind us of how the calendar works on this, Mark, because I get confused by this. Does that mean that there's a bit of a reprieve? It doesn't all have to happen by January 1, 2013?
It's complicated, David. It's so the sequester, which is the automatic cuts in payments, automatic cuts in spending, those begin January 1st. But if you tell the military, for example, you must cut $50 billion next year, which they'll have to, but you restore it 2 weeks later,
uh-huh,
then they have, you know, then it really doesn't matter much. And the same with the tax increases. Yes, your taxes will go up, but they can also, on January 5th, pass legislation that retroactively reenacts the tax cut. So, in fact, they could retroactively. The cliff is not, you know, and you got to hate these little, yes, it is more of a slope than a cliff, which gets into the nerdiest analogy I can imagine.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
we don't fall off something that is irrevocable as long as the government acts. But here's the problem. The markets are going to take a look and say, if Democrats and Republicans can't get it together with such a deadline staring us in the face, that there's going to be, I mean, I don't know if the credit rating will be decreased. The stock market is going down today. Certainly it has some repercussions for the economy, even if they pull it together in the next couple of weeks.
So it sounds like, I mean, we may well go over the cliff, but we won't necessarily hit bottom, that there's still a little bit of wiggle room in those first few days of next year. We just have a few seconds left, Mark, but who will you be watching on the Hill as sort of key players in this? Are there Republicans of stature who could step forward and make a difference? What's your sense of sort of who to keep a close eye on in the weeks ahead?
There's a group called the Main Street Republicans. It's a group of 50 to 60 moderate Republicans. About 12 of them lost their seats in the last election, but there still are close to 50 moderate Republicans. They hold the balance. If they make an announcement that they're willing to work with the president, then the Tea Partiers are simply going to be out of luck if John Boehner makes the same sort of announcement. So the two two people to watch are John Boehner on the Republican side and then Chris Van Hollen, who's the head of the Budget Committee for the Democrats. These are the guys that I would be watching. If I were Nancy Pelosi and she's having a news conference as we speak, I would say the Republicans going home to enjoy the holidays. We won't.
Yeah.
We're going to be here. And I don't know if the Democrats are willing to do that. They want to go home for the holidays. But I've never seen a holiday season like this in Washington.
And we'll have to hold it there because we have to join NPR. But Mark Sandelow, Associate Director of University of California's Washington Center, thanks so much. And now we'll join NPR's coverage.